We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
This podcast is powered by SportsDrink, your digital water cooler.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Attention to Detail, the podcast. I'm your host, Coleman Ayers. Today, I'm going to be having my guy, Chris Likes, on here. Chris is not only a great athlete, somebody who provides a lot of wisdom in this episode, but also a pretty good friend, gives a lot of wisdom in this episode, not only about the on-court stuff, what skills to have for small guards, certain techniques, but also the mental side of things. And this goes past the confidence that we talk about. This goes into him being pretty transparent about a lot of the stuff that went down in his last couple of years of college, and kind of how he's gotten through some pretty significant psychological barriers as a basketball player, as a smaller guard, but also as a human. So I'm really excited for you guys to hear this episode. As always, if you want more resources, make sure to check out my Instagram, my YouTube, Discord channel, pretty much everything that we're doing on every channel to make sure that you guys have as much content, as many resources as you need around the world. All right, so all that'll pretty much be By Any Means Basketball. You can get to all of it from my Instagram, from my YouTube. But again, I just want to be the ultimate resource for you guys as hoopers around the globe to make sure that you guys have everything you need to get to that next level. All right. Anyways, enough about me. Let's get to it.
Chris, my guy, welcome. Appreciate you for hopping on the podcast. One thing I will say is I've been to a lot of places this year, and I kind of texted you about this a few times.
Yeah.
But you always get like the, you know, what's your favorite player? And it's like Kyrie, Steph, Ja. But somehow, damn near everywhere I go, there's always that the few kids who are like, Chris Likes, I've seen you, you know, in the videos with them. And honestly, bro, it's crazy to see how many people around the world, you know, tune in to what you've been doing for years now, and see how you inspire people from, you know, every level, every corner of the world. And I think it's a testament to, obviously, the work you put in. So you push the limits at every level. That's kind of why I wanted you get on here as well, just talk about that. And I mean, that's even dating back to high school. Like, you know, not a lot of people know that we went to rival schools for real.
Exactly.
I was at St. John's, which are like, I mean, if you know anything about basketball in the DMV area, like the ultimate rivalry over there. Obviously, Chris averaged like 10 times more points than me, but what it allowed me to see was kind of like the development from Gonzaga, even like at a freshman level. When you were a freshman, all the way up to, we went to UM together, got to work together a little bit towards the end of your career there, and then Arkansas and obviously overseas now, killing it, playing super efficient, winning games, all that stuff. So yeah, man, it's been cool to see your journey, and I'm excited to get your perspectives on a lot of this stuff.
I appreciate you having me, man, as always. I think you got one of the most intriguing basketball minds out there. I think what you do, man, is in a class of its own. I tune in pretty much to all of everything that you do. And it's always kind of the mindset I had towards things, like just working on things in a different way than what the traditional way is, you know. And I think kind of ties into where I'm at with basketball. And for me, it's always been bigger than basketball, just because the traditional thing is guys are supposed to be tall playing basketball. We all know. Mm-hmm. For me, it's always been, this is what I wanted to do. And I wasn't going to let, you know, something that I couldn't control, which is my height, be the reason I play basketball. So,
no, that's a fact. That's a fact. No, I appreciate the kind words as well. And that kind of leads me into the first question, which is like, and you talk about this enough on your Instagram and interviews, you know, dating back to high school, but what's your mindset when you step on the court? Like, is there a common thing that you're thinking about or you're kind of have in your mind every single time you get on the court? And you're probably the shortest player out there, but you're still making it work.
Yeah. I would say it's kind of changed a little bit over the years. It started off with just proving I belonged out there. So I was in straight kill mode, killer mentality. Like, I'm trying to prove to everybody that, like, you know, I'm out here for a reason. Mm. And then once I felt like, you know, I kind of gained some notoriety and people started, like, kind of knowing who I was, then it kind of changed from, like, all right, people know who I am to, like, let me, like, show that I'm not just a highlight guy. Like, I'm actually, like, a solid basketball player. And then now it's changed into my professional career, it's changed into really being efficient, showing that what I do on the court translates to winning. So they all kind of play, you know, the same, play within each other. It's still, I'm always trying to prove I belong out there, but it's always, it's progressed in a number of different ways.
Yeah, for sure. No, I like that. And one thing that I've always noticed as well is, like, I think a lot of that feeds into how you play defensively.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of time when we talk about small guards, and even myself, I fall into this, is like, we don't really talk about how people can potentially see you as a liability on the defensive side of things. And every conversation I've had about you with people who have, you know, analyzed your game, whatever, been like, you know, it's, you would expect him to be a liability, but he's not. And I think a lot of that is a testament to mindset, but also technique. So talk a little bit about, like, not only the mindset that goes into playing defense as, you know, a smaller guard, but also the kind of the technical portion of it, certain techniques that you use to stay in front, but also be pesky as hell and defend taller players.
Right. So, you know, one thing I feel like I always have the advantage in is speed. So, and I wouldn't say I was always super defensive minded. When I first started playing basketball, though, I wasn't really talented on the offensive side. So I use, you know, my passion for the game to be like Patrick Beverly, like, just, you know, emphasis on defense. But as I progressed and I got better skill-wise on offensively, it kind of, like, you know, focused on that side. And it wasn't until, I remember it was a high school game where UVA came to watch me, and Coach Turner told me, like, look, they want to see you, like, play defense.
Yeah.
And that's when one of those games I was just picking up full court, and I realized, like, okay, I can use the same type of speed. I can use the same instincts that I have on offense, I can use that on defense. And that's reading the passing lane. See, a lot of people think basketball, like, is just, well, especially on the defensive side, is like straight man-to-man, like, man in front of you, right? But it's a little more than that. Like, you can see the next play ahead, and that's where some of the guys, like, I remember D-Wade was one of the first guys I watched. Mm. Like, anticipation, like, just getting in those passing lanes, you know, reading the next play, making the guy uncomfortable with the ball. Like, we're already lower to the ground. Speaking about smaller guards in particular, mm-hmm. you know, when we're lower to the ground, you know, they don't necessarily want to put that ball right there in front of you. So you can, like, jab at them. And I learned this from Marcus Smart. I talked with him one offseason at Miami, and he was just saying, like, just keep playing. Like, keep playing. That's what a lot of people do, is they stop playing because they feel like they're beat. But, you know, when you're small like that, you can get into those tight spots. You know, if you keep playing, you'll end up eventually get your hand on the ball, which is important, man. You just got to – think about it, you just got to keep fighting. Like, man, that's one thing. I don't really give up too much.
Nah, for sure. And, I mean, a couple points off that. Number one is, I think a lot of people don't realize, like, the importance of, like you said, recovery on defense.
Yeah.
Like, they get beat and they think that's the end game right there. And exactly. It's like, in reality, you're one of the best I've seen. And Marcus Smart is the guy to talk to for sure in terms of that. It's like, you'll get beat. It's basketball. You score 100-something points a game, you know, at a lot of levels. it's an offensive game, so you're going to get beat, but being able to take the angle to get back to kind of re-engage that contact, that's huge. You played football growing up a little bit, didn't you?
A little bit, yeah, a little bit of football.
Do you think that helped at all in terms of jumping in passing lanes and just kind of understanding, like, telegraphing passes?
Yeah, I definitely think so. I think it also comes from a lot of, you know, how I play video games too.
Yeah, true.
In particular, you know, I don't play much video games anymore, but, you know, when I used to, I was always in the passing lanes when I was trying to steal. And you can have an offensive mindset on defense. You know, that's what I tell a lot of the guys that DM me, ask me about defense. I tell them, like, look, have an offensive mindset on defense in terms of reaching, you know, gambling. But at the same time, though, you got to be cautious about the gambling. Maybe talk with your coach or something about that. But I'm sure he'll understand it too. Like, if you're getting steals, you know, he's not going to be upset about that.
Nah, for sure. That's funny you say that about 2K. One of my guys, Jason Preston, plays for the Clippers. He's definitely one of the better IQs I've ever seen. And people ask him about it, and he's like, he's playing 2K.
Okay,
I was like, hey, I mean, you're just seeing a bunch of patterns in the game of basketball in a way that's like, I mean, you can only watch so much film. You can only play so much. You get tired as hell if you're playing all day, like making reads all day. So, I mean, at some point, like, I could definitely see the value in that. And you ain't the only one that said that. So what – actually, before we move on, you mentioned that you talked to Marcus Smart down at UM. Are there any other players – you don't even have to name them, but I'm just curious, like, how you've picked other players' minds, because whether it be at UM, you know, there's a lot of players that are always working out, practice facility, Wasco. But, I mean, you've been around a lot of players in DMV, everywhere. So how have you been able to kind of take from other players – whether you talk to them or whether just watching other players' games and kind of being able to pull from certain things and add to yours?
So Miami was a unique experience, just like how you said. You know, a lot of guys spent their off seasons down there, so we was able to play pickup. I was able to play pickup with a number of guys, probably too many to really just go down and list all of them.
Yeah.
But I think the biggest thing was they always told me to just, like, just keep going, like, keep working, and, you know, you'll put yourself in a position where, like, if they feel like you're needed, then they'll find you. Like,
facts.
And I'll probably say on defense, though, I like to watch Drew Holiday because he was one of those guys that I feel like he plays with an offensive mindset on defense. Like, he reads the guy with the ball. He reads their moves pretty well. That's because, you know, he's talented on the offensive side as well, too.
True.
And he plays. What I mean by playing, like, with offensive mindset is you're the aggressor on defense.
Yes.
You're not waiting for him to make a move and, like, are you reacting to it? Because by the time you start playing guys at different levels, it gets too late. Like, these guys are scared. So what I'll do is, like, I told one of my guys, the other American on my team now, I told him, like, yo, jab at him, make him try to go this way. Then you can go for the ball right there. Because if you jab at him with the right and now he's like, all right, bet I got the left, and you're all plotting that you're about to go to the left, you feel me? You're in a position to steal the ball. Now he's about to fumble the ball out of bounds or something just because you had an offensive mindset on defense.
Yeah. No, that's a fact. I've never even put it that way. And I'm going to start using that because it's like everyone loves playing offense. And once you start to get people to see the offense and defense, I think that's huge. And, I mean, like, if you look at Drew, if you look at all these other top defenders, really any level, they're the ones who are closing space on the offensive player. It's not like they're waiting for the defense or the offense to come to them. They're seeing that ball handling often closing space. Like you said, they're kind of baiting them into certain directions. And then when you bait someone into something, you know they're going that way. You anticipate it. So anticipation, all that stuff is – and I think it makes defense more fun too, right?
Like, it does. It really does.
Just sit back and wait for people to come to you. It's like, all right, whatever. But if you're the one who's the aggressor, you're playing offensively, it just makes it a lot more engaging, which is, you know, good for the long term.
Lou Dort was another guy.
Yes.
Watch. He does it too.
100%.
Just constantly, like, being, like, engaged on that side of the ball. And it's tough. Yeah. It's tough.
It is. It is. But it's definitely a strategic part of the game for sure.
Right.
All right. So growing up, you said you weren't very skilled at first. Defense was kind of your main thing. How would you say, and obviously this is a long, over the course of your childhood, long term thing, but how would you say you improved your game in terms of, like, did you just hoop a lot? Did you play against high level competition? Did you do certain drills? Like, how would you say that you kind of approach your development, even without thinking about it? Because when you're 10 years old, like, you're really thinking about like targeted development. But how would you say you got to the level you were at by the time you were a freshman, sophomore, junior in high school?
So I've definitely, you know, I'll give credit to my mom for, you know, getting me into community basketball. She was the one that initially got me into it. But really the dedication from my father, being outside, like me and him, my brother, outside in the driveway, you know, just working on things that he knew I was going to need, because, you know, he knew I wasn't going to be super tall. But we didn't work on the floater too much though, but he had me with dribble pull-ups, shooting. My father could really shoot the ball. And then Markel's trainer, Keith Williams, that was my first. So my dad found out that, all right, like, this is the guy to go to if you want really up your skills, you know, in the off season. So Keith Williams is who I started with, and he had me doing, so, all right, it was a lot of ball handling, but after the ball handling, it was right in the full court one-on-one.
Yeah.
And sometimes it would be, you got to stay in the lanes.
Yeah.
It would be, you got to play. And he would always have me going against older guys. I don't know if that was what my dad wanted or if he just felt like that's what I needed. But in a matter of like 2 weeks, I'd say, a month, maybe tops in a month, like, I already saw myself getting better just like, you know, by playing against older competition and then not having to, I can't pass the ball to nobody in one-on-one. And it's full court, so it's a conditioning drill too.
Mm-hmm.
I have to work on my skills. I have to be able to get my shot off because there's nobody to pass to. And I really feel like that was, you know, my time with Keith Williams was definitely a big progression moment, because I saw, that's why I learned, all right, this is what I need to be doing. This is how I work on my skills. And then that's where my creative mindset kicked in, and I started working on things myself. I was always fast. I was always like athletic. I wanted to be able to jump, but we'll get into that too. My dad, we had the 6 foot court. I probably told you this before. I had 6 foot court in the basement. It's straight carpet. So the TV right there, the court down here on this end. So it's a long line. It's enough space though for me to, you know, get crazy down there. So anytime we watch the NBA, right? That's all we watch. I didn't watch college basketball until the year before I got to college, which is, you feel me, if I probably would have been better if I did, but I watched straight NBA. So anything I seen them doing, like in terms of dunks, especially at a young age, I was going to go do. Like halftime, I was like, all right, man, like, I'm going to try all the dunks that I just seen. And I tell everybody, man, like that was the reason right there. Like, I went and tried. I was working on jumping at a young age.
Facts. No, and I mean, both of those are great points on the skill side and on like the athleticism side of things. I think sometimes we overthink, especially at a young age, what can help athletes get better. Like, we don't need the most intricate drills in the world. Hooping and jumping at a young age is not only sufficient, but probably better than, you know, a lot of what a lot of athletes are doing. That's why, like, when I have athletes come in at a young age, but even older guys, like, all right, we're going to hoop. We're going to play ones with different constraints. Like, we're going to mess around with, like, how we're playing ones. But the same thing with full court. Like you said, even Keith was like, sometimes you can go in the paint, sometimes you can't. Yeah. Full court, I'm sure you guys played at some point, half court, like, switching around what you want out of it. But, I mean, if you hoop, you play a lot of one-on-one, and you jump and try things and explore as a kid, I mean, chances are you're going to get pretty athletic, pretty skilled, especially because then – I'm sure you would go after playing the one-on-one and you'd be like, damn, I missed this shot a couple times. Let me go work on this in the driveway. And then it's just like a constant like push and pull where like, I'm going to try this out. Shit, it ain't work. I'm going to come back and work on that. And again, like, you don't, it ain't that difficult, but I think a lot of people try to overcomplicate it. Once you get up to the pro level, college level, it can be a little bit different because you need targeted work. But especially as a high school player, let alone a middle school player, and I mean, that's it. Hooping, jumping, sprinting. Just
a lot of years, man. A lot of the things I see now is just overthinking.
Yeah.
It's really simple. I'm not going to say it's simple, but in terms of how you need to work, that's what's simple.
No, for sure.
What you posted the other day, too, when me and Lonnie was doing the full court, we had to beat
Yeah, it was Delve, Justin, you and Lonnie in there.
Keith had us doing that, too.
Yeah.
You know, that was the main thing. Like, all right, we got to beat two defenders.
100%. And you got to figure it out. I ain't going to tell you exactly, like, how to do it. You just, because in a game, when you don't have a coach in your ear telling you how to do it, like, you're going to have to figure it out. You got to adapt and just hoop. So I think it's stuff like that. And I was going to ask, like, how you develop such a good feel for the game as well. But I think that's it. Just, like, it wasn't like, let me do all these drills and then try to get out of that robotic nature and put it in the game. It's like, let me play and then do drills, I'm sure, that were kind of based around what you saw in the game.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's good. That's good. All right, kind of switching. We'll come back to kind of the smaller guard stuff that I'm sure a lot of people want to hear. But one thing I really want to focus on is, like, you know, a lot of people see high-level athletes on social media from the outside. They don't see, like, the ups and downs that kind of go into the nature of being a high-level athlete, professional athlete, where, you know, in college and professionally, like, people's jobs are on the line. There's a lot of pressure. You do a good job of being transparent on social media. But I don't even think, like, a lot of people know how much you have gone through, how much people in your position have gone through, whether it be, you know, your last year at UM, switch over to Arkansas, now you're halfway across the world, like, you're adapting well. But shit isn't easy. So speak a little bit to, like, the psychological part of it.
Yeah.
Everything, you know, from a bird's eye view that you've dealt with, and then how you've kind of worked through that. Because I know a lot of athletes, you know, that I talk to daily who are kind of struggling with the same things. I think you could offer a good perspective on that.
All right. So, yeah, this is what I really like talking about, because the last 2 years for me was probably, like, the hardest, toughest years in terms of my basketball career. Like, and basketball means a lot to me, so it was really tough on my life. And, yeah, starting with Miami, and I feel like this is really important, so I definitely want to speak on this. But, you know, my senior year, first game of the season, I shot the ball, like, terrible. Like, I couldn't make anything. But I was determined. So the second game of the season, you know, I'm playing really well. Had 20 points, 5 assists, 5 rebounds, and, like, 2 minutes going into the second half. So it was still 18 minutes to play.
Damn.
Yeah, I was like, all right, bet. Like, you feel me? I thought I was going to start off slow, but, you know, I'm having a good game. I ended up, you know, making a move. I go up to shoot. Guy kind of slides under me. You can't find this anywhere. Like, I went to look for it just to kind of, like, you know, see what happened. Couldn't find it anywhere, but the guy kind of, he slides under me, and I jumped pretty high on my jump shot. So, it was pretty bad ankle sprain. I'm doing rehab all year, trying to get back out on the court, and it's not going that way. Like, my ankle is just telling me, like, look, man, it's not ready. And the tough part about it was, like social media, they was on my ass. Like, why is Chris, like, when is Chris coming back? I thought it was just an ankle sprain. Like, that's 2 weeks. Like, why is he not back on the court? So two games, and I missed the rest of the season. And it was tough for me because I couldn't necessarily say what I wanted to say. And it just got to a point where I just had to, you know, take it on the chin and kind of just deal with it, because I feel like, you know, a lot of athletes go through that. Like, we get on Twitter, you know, we see all these basketball analysts, all these basketball geniuses, whatever you want to call them, you know, they're saying, oh, he should have did this, or he should have did that, or, you know, they're always voicing their opinion. And that's the good thing about Twitter. Everybody can voice their opinion, but you don't necessarily see what's going on behind the scenes. And it was really tough for me because, you know, they was questioning whether I wanted to play or not, which is beyond me, because I spent 4 years already, you know, playing through injuries. I was injured every year, like, going through something. Everybody's injured at some point, right?
Oh, yeah.
I'm going through that. I'm playing through hella injuries. And then senior year, it's like, all right, well, this time I can't. And it was the first time in my career, my entire basketball career, where I couldn't play through it. And it was eating me inside. And it was hard for me to, you know, go to the games because I started questioning myself, like, am I doing everything I can to, like, get back on the court? And it put me in a real, like, real low place, man. Real low place. But before I get to the next part, I'll give you some light. Like everything that I went through in these past 2 years, I need it for my career now. Mm. So I just want them to hear that to be like, okay, like it's not all bad, but like yeah. Where you are in your journey is a part of the process. Like it's gonna build you in a way that you need it. And at the time I didn't need that. So for the first time in my life, basketball was taken away from me. And I had to dissociate my life and happiness away from basketball. I had to find happiness besides what I was used to doing. I was always getting my piece of happiness from playing basketball, but I couldn't do that right now. So I had to, you know, spiritually grow in a way. So the year goes on. I don't end up making it back on the court. The team was fighting hard, but a lot of us end up transferring out. I transferred to Arkansas. Really, I wanted to be a part of – I just wanted to be in the tournament. That was pretty much my main goal. I didn't know if I was going to do college again because keep in mind that's my senior year. But I wanted to be in the tournament because I didn't really like what I was hearing from in terms of, like, scouts and the feedback I was getting going into that professional year. And my ankle was still, like, really bad. Like, I wasn't me. I'm going to say that. I just wasn't me. But I started to get better. I was working with some guys in Miami. I started to get better going into that summer. Ended up choosing Arkansas. And so the year starts, I'm spending extra time because I still feel like my ankle is not, it's not there. Like I didn't have that same explosiveness. I didn't have that same confidence. And those two things right there are a big part of what makes me on the court. So the year, you know, I started off the year kind of shaky a little bit. I had a couple games where I started to feel like myself again, but I was never able to sustain it. And if I thought, you know, Twitter at Miami was bad, Arkansas, it was even worse. Like, you feel me?
I can imagine, bro.
It was at one point I had to just take Twitter off my phone because, you know, they don't really know. They didn't know, like, me like that. Like, they didn't know what I was doing in Miami. You know, they just see, you know, this little guy coming in and, you know, taking crazy shots or, you know, what they didn't realize was I was playing the game, but I was trying to find myself again too. Mm. Like I was trying to find my confidence in myself again. And at times I was forcing it. Like I would go back, watch film, be like, damn, like I was really forcing it there. But in the mindset of the game, I'm like, all right, I'm really trying to just feel it out, like feel myself out because I haven't played in a year. Like I haven't touched the basketball or been on the basketball court in a year. And the year was just up and down for me, man. Like it was times where I found like my peace, even though I wasn't playing. Like that was probably the lowest amount of minutes I was playing in my career, like ever since freshman year. Even my freshman year at Miami, I ended up starting halfway through the season. So I got to a point where I was, you know, barely seeing the floor, man. And that took me even lower than where I was in Miami. Like, I at least knew that, you know, right, I'm going to get back. I'm going to get healthy at some point. But now it was like, did I lose it? Like, did I lose, like, the skill I had? And it was tough because I had to find a way to keep going. Even, like, I wasn't really getting the opportunity. And rightfully so. Like, I wasn't playing good. But I had to find a way to keep believing in myself. And this is what I mean when life, you know, goes in full circles, because this is how my basketball career started. Like it started that way. Like nobody was really believing in me. And I had to find a way to really believe in myself. And obviously, yeah, we get to the Elite Eight, which was a great run, man. Like that was really special. I got what I asked for, right? But it's not always greener on the other side, especially in terms of individually, but I couldn't be selfish. Like I was happy to be a part of that, man. Like it was really cool. But after leaving Arkansas, it got to a point, you know, I had such a, like, I'm gonna say terrible year in my opinion, because I know what I'm capable of. I know what I've done in the past. But I had to let go of the past. Like I had to, it was almost like I felt like I was reborn. Like I had to let go of it, to embrace the future. Like I had to learn that, you know, no matter what you're doing in the past, you have to keep the same type of habits. And that was one thing I was proud of with, I was happy with Coach Musch at Arkansas, man. He taught me some really great habits. that, you know, I feel like will keep me. So did Coach L too. Like, I still, you know, I read a lot of books because of Coach L. But he taught me, Must taught me really how to, like, work. And, you know, I really wasn't getting the looks that I thought I was going to get, you know, going into my professional career. So it got to a point where I had to kind of think about the option of, you know, not playing basketball anymore. Like that was a legitimate option just because of the year I had, and it just really wasn't good. So I got to a point where, you know, I had to just keep grinding. I was still grinding, even though I didn't know if I was going to be playing basketball. But this team here in Denmark, you know, they took a chance on me. Coach called me. He was like, look, man, like I want you to play like how you played in Miami. And, you know, I really believe in you. And I will be forever be grateful for him because, you know, he instilled that confidence back in me from day one. And he gave me the keys and was like, look, like fill it out and get back to who you are. And, you know, I really appreciate that, man, because it was definitely tough for me. Not really understanding, like, why I had to go through that. But now, looking back 2 years now and comparing to where I am today, like, mentally, I'm on a whole different level. Like, mentally, spiritually, physically, like, I'm on a whole different level. I take care of my body more. I read a lot more. You know, I focus on, you know, self-development a lot more. And all of that was important for me, you know, getting to where I am now and, you know, still aspiring to climb even higher. So I know, yeah, that was long, bro, but
No, that was good. That was exactly what I was hoping you would be comfortable enough to go and actually be transparent about that. So I appreciate that, bro. And I think that just hearing that story can help a lot of people. I mean, obviously there's a lot more even than you would have ever mentioned. Yeah, it goes into stuff, whether it's a UM, you know, I didn't hear as much about what was going on in Arkansas, which seemed like it was, you know, it was just kind of you were in a weird place mentally. And, you know, we don't always have the best years. And people down here knew you were still a bucket, but it's like the people Arkansas, you're going to a new fan base. And then,
yeah.
So I think, I mean, number one, I think, like you said, people from the outside in sports never really see the full story, let alone 50, like, they don't see 50% of what's going on, 25% of what's going on. They just see the headlines. They see what's going on Twitter. They see if you're playing and how well you're playing.
Right.
It's like, if you're not producing, I feel like they don't even see you as a human at some point. It's like, yeah, you are a basketball player. And that's the most toxic thing to me about sports, and especially sports at a high level. But now even, like, I get youth players who are thinking the same thing. They're like, oh yeah, like my parents or like whatever, like coaches, they're going through the same thing as you on a mini level, because it a lot of times athletes aren't even seen as humans anymore.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. But I think, you know, one positive, like you mentioned, is like everyone talks about being battle tested. And I mean, at some point in your life, if you really want to succeed and whatever it may be, basketball, but also everything outside of basketball, like, you got to get battle tested. It's the same reason why teams, you know, who come from good conferences end up probably going further in March Madness or playoffs, NBA playoffs, NFL playoffs, because you've been through adversity. You've been down in the dumps. You've been to those points mentally where it's like, all right, I'm going to have to get through this.
Yeah.
And once you do get through those, like you said, you kind of come out, I would say 99.9% of the time, you come out in a better mindset and you just feel a little bit more unbreakable than you were beforehand. Which is, I mean, I would argue that's probably contributing to your success this year. Like, mm-hmm. We were talking before in the podcast, you're like, yeah, I shot terribly last game. And I already know for you, like, that's not going to affect you much now. You're just like, yeah, yeah. Like, whereas beforehand, I don't know, at UN, maybe you had a bad game, or high school, you had a bad game, and you consider it a little bit more, you start thinking about it. And those are, again, like the lessons that you've learned through that process. And I think a lot of people can learn that because, like you said, everyone gets there. To the extent that everyone gets there is different. Some people, it's just a little bit of adversity. Some people, it's a lot. But as long as you push through, like, what I've found is that usually you expect a break to go your way and it doesn't. And at some point after you're like, that was the last chance, like, I'm done. Mm-hmm. That's when that break happens.
Yep.
And that's probably like coach taking a chance on you.
Yeah.
And you eventually get somebody to believe in you, or something goes your way just a little bit after you expected, but it ends up being perfect timing. So no, I appreciate you for being transparent about that. And I think a lot of people will take from that journey and learn from it.
I hope so, man. I mean, the one thing I really took from, you know, my year at Arkansas was I wasn't going to lose confidence in myself ever again. Like that was a no-brainer. That was a commandment that I had with myself. Yes. I was never going to lose confidence in myself again, because confidence is what makes me, I feel like me. Like that's what makes me the player I am. And you can see it when a guy's not playing with confidence, they're just not the same. They're a portion of what they are on the court. You know, they're second guessing. And that's what I was doing all year at Arkansas, just second guessing. Like, and, you know, it's not a good formula for a basketball player at all.
Definitely not. And I think, I mean, everyone talks about like the it factor that players have. You know what I'm saying? Like, some players may be as talented as you, or as, you know, if we compare two players, they may be equally as talented from just like a, if you see them in a workout, they're going to be the same player.
Exactly.
And then one is like significantly better than the other one. Clearly, like, you have, quote unquote, the it factor. And I think a lot of that, like you said, is just your confident ass dude on the court, at least, you know, when you're kind of focusing on that outside of like a couple years. You've clearly shown that you've been very confident, and now that confidence is more sustainable. So how is it, just willpower, or like, are you employing certain techniques to not lose that confidence, to kind of fulfill that promise that you made yourself at Arkansas?
It's a little bit of the willpower.
Mm-hmm.
Also the understanding of like how, like, when I go work out, like, I know that, okay, I'm working on this today, or I work on this every day. Like, this has to show in the game. Like, it has to show in the game. And, or not, it has to, because that means you're relying on it to do
true.
It. I know it's going to show in the game.
Right.
This is what I'm working on, and I work on this every day. I put in work. Like, it's going to show. It has, like, it's just going to show. And also willpower, too. Like, you can't let, you know, like I was telling you earlier before we started this, like, I had a bad shooting game in the last game.
Yep.
And, but I told you, I knew it was coming. Like, just the law of averages. But
exactly,
you can't allow that one game, or you can't allow one little thing in your life that doesn't go your way to just slow down your progress. Like, you got to, you know, take that on the chin and be like, okay, well, why didn't it work? Or maybe I'll try it again. If it doesn't work again, then maybe I have to change something up. And then that's where you go to work. Then you start building on your craft. You start working on the things that you need to work on. So the biggest thing is you just don't stop. Like,
you can't
stop, man. And believing in yourself is the number one rule. And that's always been the number one rule for me. So
for sure. And I mean, I think you hinted at this, but it's like, just having a good relationship with failure is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Not even failure, but just like, I mean, I guess you could say failure, but more so just bad performance in a way. Like you said, it's a lot of averages. Like, the thing that a lot of players don't realize, especially when they're a high school or middle school or looking up to you, like, for example, I heard about your good games. I heard about when you were killing. Like, I seen the highlights. I seen stuff like that. I didn't know you had a bad game.
Yeah.
And that's just like, you don't see that on social media. It's not like you're going to go post, or anybody's going to go post.
Right.
Like, yeah, I had a 1-for-11 shooting game or something. Just just natural, right? And I think when players look at you from the outside, or others from the outside, they see perfection, when in reality, it's just not the case.
That's what social media and Twitter and all of that, that's what that does.
Exactly. And it's not even just basketball. It's life in general. Like,
yeah,
you know, for it's outside of basketball, it's people getting jobs, like people in relationships, like they see all the good stuff, but in reality, they don't know all the stuff that goes in behind it. And hearing you kind of acknowledge these things and also mention that it's like, look, on to the next game. I think a lot of people should take from this, whether they're a player, whether a coach, whether whoever, like, understanding that failure is going to happen. And when it does, it's like, it's inherent. And if you understand that, then you can move on to that next performance a lot easier.
I think the biggest thing I had to do was dissociate basketball, like, from my life. Like, obviously, like, I love the game, but I was associating it with my life. And if I had a bad game, it would be a bad day. Like, you feel me? Like, it can't be that way. Like, you have so many blessings and opportunities that go on throughout the day that you have to be grateful for. And if you have a bad game, like, so what? Like, go work on the things that you didn't do well in the game the next day. Like, it's not the end of the day. And I think that's the biggest, like, I go into the game with no fear. Like yeah. I'm gonna play, you know, how I'm supposed to play. I'm gonna do the things that I know I'm capable of doing. And if it doesn't go well, then I know that I got to go back and go work on some things, but it's not the end of the day. And I think that helps me be a lot less tense.
Yeah.
Like, Arkansas playing, I was tense. Like,
for sure.
I didn't make no mistake. So I knew I was coming out the game. Like, that was tough for me, because I had never really had that type of leash. But it taught me how to, even in that environment, even in that atmosphere, you still have to be confident in yourself. Like, you can't go into, like, all right, like, I'm not going to make this mistake. I'm not going to make this mistake. Because when you do that, you put it in your mind, and 80% of the time, you're going to go make that mistake. Because it's on your mind. Like, you feel me? So you got to just go into the game, like, free, man. Like, look, I'm here to play. I'm going to give it all I got. And if it don't go well, then, all right, we'll get better.
Yeah. No, that's what I would say. Is like, don't play not to lose. Play to win. Don't play not to do badly. Play to play well. And that's for basketball, that's for life. Like, if you're always thinking about fucking up, chances are you're gonna fuck up, because you're nervous. So yeah, man, I mean, I think that's huge, and that's one reason why I try to focus on why athletes, like, bro, and you don't want to hear this as a young athlete, like, there's a lot more to life than basketball. You're just like, nah, fuck
right.
Basketball is my life, like, why would I focus on anything else? But once you get to our age, you start maturing, like, well, maybe there is more, and even things that are more fulfilling than basketball. Like, I'm sure there are things in life, like, I don't know, fucking learning something new, or like seeing a new part of the world, that feels better than having a good game.
Yeah.
And again, you don't want to hear that as like a 17-year-old, let alone, I mean, even a 21-year-old, 22-year-old, just like, yeah, who is like, it's basketball. But at some point, you start to realize that there's more to life.
Like, more freely that way, though. Like, you're going to the way more free when you're not so focused on basketball as my life. Like, basketball is something that you do, and it's also a game. Like, you feel me? You can love the game. Like, you can love the game. Like, I give all I got when I'm out there, but it's not my life. It's not who I am. You feel me? Like,
right.
More to life that'll make me peaceful and a lot more happier than putting all my chips on the basketball game.
Exactly, bro. And I think, I mean, if you frame it this way, and I've talked to a couple athletes very recently, like yesterday, the day before, about this, like, if I took away basketball from you, would you be nothing, or would you have other things to offer to the world, to your girlfriend, to like your homies? Like, is basketball literally you? And they're like, nah, like, of course I have other things going on. I'm like, all right, well, why are you considering it to be everything? And I think, like, even for me, like, playing in a super high pressure, like, high school environment for me, you know, I couldn't do much, because it was probably like you at Arkansas, where I'm like, yeah, bro, if I fuck up, I'm coming straight out of the game. But and then after my playing career ended, and I chose to focus on like the training, the coaching side of things, I don't identify as a player.
Yeah.
So I literally, my skills were just exponentially went up. And it's like, because I don't go into a game tense. Like, I don't care who I'm playing against now. I know that, number one, I'm gonna probably get some buckets. Number two, if I don't, I don't care, because it's like,
exactly,
I ain't even a player no more, bro. Like,
yeah,
I train. I don't hoop anymore. And I wish that I'd been able to apply that same mindset. And that's why sometimes I think, like, damn, I should go play pro for a year. Like,
yeah,
I should just go try something. Because I know also this is gonna be a weird like mental exercise, where as soon as I identify as a player, I'm gonna get tense again. And then it's like, yeah. So I don't know, but it's interesting that you mentioned like feeling tense as a player at Arkansas, because I think that's facts. Would you say, because being tense is different than nervous, would you say that you've ever been nervous in a game, so to speak? Or is it more so just
most of my games at Arkansas, I was nervous. Like,
yeah,
I was so, like, it wasn't that, like, I was scared somebody was going to say something to me.
Nah.
Like, but it was, one, I knew I was going to be on the film session.
Yep.
You know, I'm focusing on every play, like, trying not to mess up. Two, like, all right, I don't know, like, what it was like, to a point where I didn't know how to play. Like, this is the crazy thing. Like, I've only told like some of my family, members, because they know me best.
Yeah.
It was like, you don't look like you out there. And I was like, I don't feel like me. Like, I don't feel like myself. I'm overthinking. I'm second guessing myself every like move I'm trying to make. And it's like, all right, I know I'm coming out if I don't do this, right?
Yes.
I know I'm coming out.
No, that's the craziest thing, bro.
Then it would get to some points like, all right, like, excuse my lane, but I was like, fuck it. Like, I'm going to do it anyway. And then that's when you could see some of the crazy stuff I was doing.
Yeah.
Go to Twitter and they on my ass. Like, he has no IQ. Mm. And, you know, like, I really do have IQ. It's just like, I didn't want to come out. So I was trying to force it.
True. Nah, and that's the weird part is when you're like, you don't feel like yourself, but you're trying to force it because you're trying to will yourself back into that. And that's like, if somebody can figure out that fully, they'll make $1 million. Cause I know there's players at the highest level who get into that zone. I mean, you look at Steph, some games he'll shoot 0-for-11. And it's like, if somebody can figure out how to get out of that, I don't feel like myself zone. Then like, number one, it's probably impossible. Just human nature. Number two is like, hey, that would be a rich man. But it's crazy to me how like you, it shows up in how literally how you move. Like some of the players I've worked with this year, gone to their games.
Yeah,
they may be a freshman, whatever. I'm watching them on TV, and I literally am like, who is that? Like, is that the same person? And it's crazy. I mean, it just shows the power of the mind once again. It's like it can literally turn you into like you're moving like a different person. You're thinking like a different person. And as soon as that game ends, you're like, you snap out of it. And it's like, what was I doing? So I don't know, man. That's crazy. But it's something that everyone goes through. And, you know, it's one of those things that's good to hear coming from you, because a lot of people would look at it from an outside perspective and be like, nah, Chris ain't never felt like that. But hey, I already know.
I mean, honestly, though, I had never gone through it until.
Yeah.
This past year.
So never at UM?
I'll say yes. UM, my freshman year, like the first 10 games.
Okay.
Maybe in the first 7-8 games. What helped
you get out of that and then to the point where you're starting your freshman year?
I just had a breakout game, and it was kind of the same thing I had went through at Arkansas. I was like, all right. Like, I'm going to just be me, and if it don't go well, then okay. Like, I got, you know, time to get better.
Yeah.
And, that eventually, what I didn't realize then was that freed me up from the tense and pressure that I was putting myself. Mm. And so then I was able to go in the game and just be free. And what I didn't realize at Arkansas was I was doing that the whole year. Like, I was doing that the whole year. And a part of that, though, was because, you know, I had something to prove because I missed the entire year. I wanted to prove to myself that, you know, I'm still that guy. But unfortunately, though, that is not how that played out at all. But I had to learn that, though. So.
No, exactly. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. I think one thing on that note is, like, I think a lot of the times you got to find a balance between, like, proving to yourself or proving to other people that you can do something and like having that dog mentality, like, oh, I'm gonna go prove y'all wrong. But then also, like, if you lean too much into that, you can start to put too much pressure on yourself. Yep. You know what I'm saying? So it's like that balance between kind of relax and be like, yo, if I don't prove them wrong, okay, fine, whatever. But then obviously you don't want to be too far over there. So you gotta also think like, all right, well, balance that with I gotta prove these motherfuckers wrong, like whatever. So I think once you find that balance is good. But I'm also curious, do you think that having that, so like at UM, it was your freshman year, you know, yes, like each year matters, but you have 4 years. Mm-hmm. And like you said, like you just had to get out of that. It was kind of like breaking the ice, whatever. Yeah. Do you think being at Arkansas for only 1 year and having like a finite amount of games before your pro career starts kind of put added pressure on you?
That too. It was just pressure coming from a whole different, a bunch of different angles. Excuse me. Just like, one, to prove to myself I'm still that guy. Two, I'm in a new environment, new fans, you know, they're expecting me to do something. So that's pressure right there. Coaching staff, you know, it's everything was a little different. Like, you know, Coach L was super laid back. You know?
Yeah.
And it's not that I haven't had coaches that are really intense, but it was just different. Like, and then you look at the year, I was only there for 9 months. So all of that is just condensed, and I'm not having the same amount of time I am to get adjusted to it as I did at Miami or as I did at being at Gonzaga for 4 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it was just a lot of pressure that was coming from different angles, but that's all in the mind, though. You feel
right.
me? That was inflicted by myself. Like I'll take
accountability.
Yeah, accountability for that.
Not for sure.
But it's understandable though.
Yeah,
it's
very.
Well, it's only understandable to people that understand like that position. But when you're looking at, you know, the social media, that's why you can't get caught up into that stuff, because they're not going to understand it like that.
No.
They're going to look at like, okay, we got this player from Miami. They don't know that I've been hurt for a year. They don't know that I played for a completely different type of coach or a completely different type of, you know, play style where the ball is in my hands the whole game. I'm calling the offensive plays. Like, it's just, I just had a lot more comfortability, you know?
Yeah, and exactly.
When you're uncomfortable though, that's where you learn the most. I was uncomfortable from the moment I left Miami. Like, if we're just being honest, not that they weren't good people or anything. It was a great program. I liked how they did everything.
Yeah.
But I was just uncomfortable, man. Like, just uncomfortable the entire time. And that tense plus that pressure plus being uncomfortable did not make a good Chris Likes. Like, that was, you know, that was tough, bro. Like,
that's fair though. I mean, you learn from it. And that's one reason why I tell players all the time, like, bro, if you got to go to a lower division or a lower conference, whatever, and fit in a program better, then go there. Like, it ain't about the name. It ain't about, yes, you want to win, but you can win at a lower division and you probably do it better because you're more comfortable.
Exactly.
You're in a better position where, you know, you can, whether it's your play style fits more with the team, whether it's you fit more, you mesh better with the teammates, with the coach, like, whether it's closer to home or further, where, like, the geography of it, anything. But, like, I think players, especially high school players, can often get caught up in, like, the – and even, like, middle schoolers going to high schoolers now, I'm seeing it at some point where it's, like, if you go to the wrong program, it can make you a completely different player than who you would expect to be or who you would be at another program. And it's just all about fit. So that's huge. But I think those are all huge lessons to learn. I always say, like, and this is another thing that you don't really realize until you get older, and you hear it all the time, it's like basketball is whatever 80% mental, 20% physical. Like, you hear that as a kid, you're like, hell no, like, I'm, you know, it's skills, it's my athleticism. But then you get to a point where it starts to open up to you that, like, it is. Like, you have players who don't work on their game at all and may not be the most skilled, but just mentally they have it, and they can just – they play better. They reach higher points in a career than somebody who's overthinking. They're kind of weak mentally. And that's not their fault. It just – it may be out of passion for the game.
Yeah.
But understanding different techniques, I think you gave some really good techniques to monitor these things, to help yourself out when you get in these points, are huge. And I think that can help every player take their game to the next level more than, like, you know, working on a certain skill even most times.
Yeah.
All right, last couple quick questions. If you had to choose, we'll kind of flip back over to the practical stuff, even though this is way more important for me. But if you had to choose three skills that you think, if you had to instill three skills in every single smaller guard to give them a better chance of success around the world, what would those three skills be?
Off rep, you gotta be a dog. Like, it's just that simple. Like, you gotta have that mentality that you're not gonna back down from nobody out there. And that's the most important, because if you had that, you're gonna be able to look like you belong out there. You know what I mean?
Back.
I would say shooting. You got to be able to shoot, especially in today's game. You got to be able to shoot off the dribble, off the catch. Definitely with range too. Just having a wide range of, you know, shots that work for your game. Now, we're not all going to be the same. And that's why I'm going to leave speed out, because I think that's one of the main questions I get. Like, all right, how would you work on your speed? Like, I didn't work on my speed. Like, I that was something I was blessed with. Obviously, there's some things you can do to work on your quicker first step, but speed is one of those things that you might just be blessed with speed. But there's often times where I'm watching film, I'm like, man, I wish I was, like, a little slower. Watching Luka, watching CJ McCollum, like, how they're able to get to their spots. Shai Gilgeous, like, these guys aren't super fast, but somehow they get to where they want to get to. So being crafty, like ball handling, yes, but being crafty, like using you know, your play style to really benefit or affect your game in a way that's in a positive way. So I think those three, you can handle the pill. I'll split it because defense is going to be important.
Yeah.
That's just to get the opportunity, though. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So
we'll put defense under being a dog. I'll help you out. No, I always struggle with that, too, because I always get people asking me that at camps and stuff. But I think one of the main things that I want to touch on there is, like, I mean, so every time I post something where it's like we're working on ball handling, we're working on shooting, like, I don't know, maybe a fade or a step back, something like that, there's always a crowd where it's like, nah, they just need to be repping out one dribble pull-ups and spot-ups. And I'm like, yes, like, we do need to get good at those. But especially, I mean, most of the players that I at least cater to on social media, just, again, law of averages, are the average human is, what, 5'11", shorter? Yeah. So, like, most people are going to be considered small guards. Right. And if you think that you can get to that next level as a small guard with only one dribbles and spot-ups, it's not going to happen. Like, if we're being realistic, you need to have a bag. You need to be able to shoot a wide variety of shots. Yeah. You need to be able to adjust on these shots. Like, you ain't going to be just shooting a standstill spot-up three every time. You're going to be needing to fade a little bit. Maybe your feet are a little bit off, you know, staggered. Maybe you're a little bit off balance. Mm-hmm. So that's why I try to kind of widen the variety of things I work with, or that I post on social media too. Cause like, if you look at your game, if you look at any small guard, like, it ain't just the basics, the foundations. Yeah. Like, you've gotten past that. Not to say that you don't still work on those foundations. I'm sure you still get up your spot up shots. You still get up your one dribble pulls for sure. But it's also adding to that, which I think is huge for people to understand.
Yeah. I mean, talking about that specifically, before you get into your next question, I remember doing a lot of workouts and coaches were always like, yo, stop fading. Like, in my mind, I was like, no, like, I'm going to need.
But you would be seeing, you would be imagining and visualizing what's going on in the game. And you know that you would need to fade in that situation.
That's like when you're working out. This is one thing for everybody that's listening. Like, when you're working out, like, envision you're in the game, like somebody's guarding you. That's what I was always good at that. I was always good at visualizing, like, all right, I got somebody on my hip real quick. Oh, quick stop. Like, all right, step back. He's long, so I got to be able to fade a little bit to get this shot off. And that's what I meant by, like, being creative in my last post. Obviously, I'm not as good as you at kind of going into depth and detailing about, you know, what I need to what you need to do when you're on the court. But, yeah, I was always fading. Like, even when it's just regular workouts, like, get into your one dribble pull-up, I want you to step back here. I was shooting a fader, and they was like, yo, like, stay on balance. I get that, but these guys are going to be tall, like, trying to, like, who I'm shooting over with. So that fade is going to give me just enough space to get it over. So, go ahead, though.
No, and the last thing I'll say about this is, like, yes, like, you also probably want to work on your regular pull-ups where you are straight up and down and quote-unquote on balance. But my thing is, like, why not prepare for times where we may not be in the perfect situations? Like, get good at the perfect stuff, but also prepare for the imperfect. Mm-hmm. Basketball is a chaotic game.
Chaotic.
So when you realize that, your workouts start to change.
Yeah.
All right, two more quick ones. You can answer these, you know, not too crazy. Let's talk a little bit about DMV basketball, because being down here, I try to explain to people, and being around the world too, I'm like, bro, that's the best basketball city in the world. You're like, nah, LA. You know, I get my respect to a lot of these places, but, like, being from there is more so, even, I mean, the town is crazy, but just the legacy of being there. Like, I'm sure you're working out with people above you. Like, you're saying you're playing with old guys who are probably pros now. And it's just like a legacy. We're like, all right, well, I'm next in line. I got to perform. So talk a little bit about being from just the D.C. area and then and how that kind of helped you as you were younger.
Bro, I still, like, I don't know if you have, but I still haven't figured out a way to, like, actually explain to people. Like, like, the only way is I saw recently that Bronny went and played.
I was at that game, too.
Once you play in that environment, though, you gonna understand. Like, I was already prepared for college because of that environment. Like,
for sure.
But what I'll speak on in the basketball community is DMV is not too big. So in terms of the basketball community, everybody kind of knows each other.
Everyone
knows each other, and they support each other in a way. So, you know, if the area is small, the competition is high, right? But we all did a good job of kind of, like, maybe internally, maybe unconsciously, whatever, we all kind of just like kept rising each other up by competing against, you know, the best talent, because it's not like a big area where, all right, this area, this town, they don't have anybody, right? Like everybody's in the same area. Everybody's in the same basket. So we're all trying to get better, but we're all like bringing each other up in a way that, you know, develops everybody.
Yeah. No, that's a fact. And I mean, I think that's the main thing that I try to focus on when I have those conversations. Like, look, and because in Miami, I've seen, you know, things from a different light. A lot of people hate on people in the basketball culture down here.
Yeah,
whether
exactly.
It's high school, whether it's college, like whatever. DMV, there's always going to be some, but I would say the vast majority of interaction and just dynamics between people is at least in some sense supportive.
Yeah.
And I almost liken it to, like, I don't know, like rappers out of Atlanta. Like everyone's putting each other on. It's not like everyone's hating on each other, just kind of dogging at each other, trying to scrap each other down, because they realize there's enough. In fact, there's not only enough room for everyone to succeed, but when somebody else succeed, that helps you, because you get to play against better competition. You get to be seen playing against better competition. So I think people realize that better than any other area. And that's what helps it so much, is that it's like, there's a lot of love there. And when you pair that with like a lot of other factors, it helps. And look, like if you look at any March Madness, there are 20 players from the DMV.
Always.
Like always. Always. And I always say, like, it may not help. It may not produce the best NBA players.
Yeah.
To be fair, compared to like in LA, which is a much bigger area, but that's a different conversation compared to other places. But if you look at college hoops, DMV owns college hoops.
Yeah.
In my opinion. Sure. So
another thing I'll say, like, is if you compare it to somewhere like Texas, right?
Mm.
The best athletes in the area might be playing football.
True.
Like the best athletes in our area are playing basketball.
Right.
That's just how it is. Like
it's our culture.
It's a basketball culture. So I think that comparison right there kind of gives you an insight as to how important basketball is to the DMV area.
Yep. No, that's perfect. All right. Last thing. What's next for you? This could be from a career standpoint, like, you know, how you're going to finish out the season. This could be from something you want to learn, something you want to develop about yourself. What's next for Chris Likes?
In a basketball sense, is continue to add things to my game that I feel like will benefit me in the long run. Finishing out the season strong. Obviously, winning the championship is my main goal. I think that would be really important, you know, going into my first professional season as a pro athlete. But really, for Chris Likes as a human being, it's really just enjoying where I am, man. Enjoying the process, enjoying the journey. We talked about it a little bit before we got on this. Just embracing where I'm at. Like each day, like is a new day and a new opportunity for me to live this life. Like it's a lot of people that's gone too soon. It's a lot of people that take days for granted. Including me, man. I used to be one of those guys that used to just, you know, take days for granted, especially when, you know, I had a bad game and I wouldn't live life to the fullest, man. So that's kind of what I'm doing now. I'm trying to learn new skills. I'm reading every day. I watch YouTube videos on things that, you know, I feel like could be useful skills in my time when the basketball stops. And, you know, for somebody that's going into their first year, I think that's kind of interesting. Speaking in third person right now, but, you know, just looking at, you know, where I am, I think it's important, especially for, you know, a lot of young guys to kind of hear that you got to take each day as its own, because a lot of things get taken away from you. And that's what happened to me in Miami. And, you know, what I was not being grateful for was taken away from me. And then I had a whole different type of environment that didn't benefit me. So you got to be grateful for each and every little thing. And that's what I do. I start my days meditating. I start my days writing down what I'm grateful for. So, you know, all those little things will help you enjoy your life a lot more. And, you know, that's pretty much what I can say about, you know, embracing your journey.
Facts. Staying present. I think that's the biggest thing.
That's, I don't know how to miss that, but that's the biggest one. Just
stay. Hey, nah, but all that goes into staying present.
Yeah.
I mean, that's basically what I took from that, is like each day is its own day. I ask what's next and you say today. And that's the biggest, like, that's to me sign of somebody who's been able to kind of enlighten themselves and stuff like that. So nah, bro, you're ahead of the game. Appreciate the wisdom. I'm sure everyone else listening to it does as well. Yeah. You got a lot of people out there who look up to you as a role model. You know that, but I mean, I can attest to that just from being around to whatever 15 countries this year and hearing your name come up literally every time. So it's been cool to see the growth, bro. I'm excited to keep seeing it. And that's not only on the basketball court, but off it. So appreciate you.
I appreciate you, man. Thank you for having me.
Yes, sir.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car riding your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.